Folks, you don't need to pay someone else to create your resume. If you pay someone else to create your resume, they will spend as much time asking you questions, requiring you to answer them, as you would creating it yourself with your own knowledge of your own background for a lot more money than our resume workbook, which tells you exactly how to do it for only $30. Page after page after page, over 50 pages, explaining in detail exactly how to handle every single line on your resume, why it's structured the way it is, what words to use, how to separate bullets from paragraphs, how to space things, what font to use, everything in enormous detail, because this is Career Tools, this is Manager Tools, and we know you want specifics.
Welcome to Career Tools. How your resume is handled. Here we go. So Wendy, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, we're going to talk about some of the myths of interviewing and your resume and how those myths started and what you can do about the situation that's kind of starts those myths. So there is a seed of something in there and then the myth grows around it. And there is something in most cases that you can do about that seed of truth or that seed of that sows the distress of the whole interviewing and resume submitting process, which most people find stressful in part because it's so opaque to them. You know, you send your resume off into the ether and at some stage you get a rejection or you get an invite for an interview and you can feel like it's the same job, it's the same resume, you've done exactly the same things, and yet sometimes you get an offer and sometimes you don't. And there seems to be no rhyme or reason. And when we don't know things, we make up stories, which we call myths. And so those myths get perpetuated because people want to explain something that's inexplicable or is unclear to them.
That's right. If you don't know it, you just make up a story.
That's right. And those myths actually are not helpful to you if you really want to have a successful search. So we're going to talk about the myths and what you can do about them.
Okay. So what's the outline today? Are we going to talk about just one myth or a bunch of myths?
No, we're going to a bunch. So there's the myth of the ATS, which is an applicant tracking system, the myth of 6 seconds, the myth of on file, the myth of feedback, and then we've got some sub-solutions within those, and then we've got one big solution right at the end.
All right. Sounds good. Okay. The myth of the ATS. And you said it's what? Applicant tracking system? Is that what it stands for?
Yeah. So basically, it's a big database, and it's where your resume goes to in general. If you're applying via a website, definitely. It's the place where your resume actually hits the company and appears to the recruiter. So it goes into the ether, and when it lands, this is where it lands. And the ATSs can be standalone, but often they're part of a bigger system. So there could be other HR services like payroll and benefit tracking that's part of this big system. Sometimes it's part of a really big system that includes finance and all sorts of company utilities in this huge system. And the applicant tracking piece is just a small piece of what this system does. So when it's implemented, there's all sorts of things that are more important. Like if it's got finance in it, it has to add up the numbers properly. And you know, you have to be able to process purchase orders and pay the bills and bill other people. And all that is more important than the ATS part. So often it's kind of redheaded stepchild and doesn't get a lot of attention. And then other companies just buy one off the shelf. And even if you buy it off the shelf, there's a lot of customization that has to happen. Each company has a different workflow for recruiting. For instance, new roles might have to be signed off by a certain level of manager. And that's usually different in different companies. Sometimes you don't have to get it signed off until you've got the candidate. And so when that is being smushed into the workflow that this company uses, again, there's some places where it's not quite right, but it's good enough. The ATSs are like most big corporate systems. They take a long time, and so by the time they're implemented, they're not really what the workflow is. So there's often a lot of workarounds, which means that the ATS actually isn't very effective.
Hmm. No, I thought ATSs in general are pretty much brilliant, masterful pieces of software. I mean, isn't the whole point of an ATS you feed in a bunch of resumes and it crunches through them and applies some heuristics and some very complicated algorithms and out pops out the perfect candidate? I mean, isn't that what they do?
Yeah. No. I think that's what the advertising says. But no, they don't work that well. So if you want to try it, go to LinkedIn, which actually a lot of recruiters are using now. They use LinkedIn as a source of resumes outside of their process. And if you put in a job search, a job title that is, or a keyword search for someone that's in your team, you probably get 1,000 resumes, 1,000 profiles, and some of them will be exactly not what you're not looking for. So for example, if you search IT project manager, I can guarantee in the first 10, there will be at least one that says project manager, brackets, non-IT. But because it has IT and project manager, it comes up in your search, even though that person is exactly what you're not looking for. And you can't get too specific, because otherwise you rule out people that aren't using exactly the word that you've just put in. But you can't get too vague because there's so many and you can't deal with thousands of resumes. So you have to find a balance. And often that balance means, I don't know, I would look for about 400 resumes if I was doing a first search. And I would expect 380 of them to be cruff, like the person's in the wrong location, they're being paid the wrong amount, they're in the wrong industry, all those kind of things. But you have to have that many in order to find the ones you want.
Right. Well, that's LinkedIn, right? I mean, surely the ATS is a lot better than that.
No, they're exactly like that.
No.
They're exactly like that. They are, you know, they might have a few more fields that you can search on, and LinkedIn as a user, you don't get all the fields that a recruiter would get. There are a few more. It's not like Google. You don't type in something and get almost exactly what you want the first time. It's much more like walking into a library and having all those books, and you got to go find the one you want. And there's a few clues, but not enough for you to stand at the front door and say, I want that book.
Okay. So the recruiter, every time they want to find a candidate, they have to go through the exact same process, what you described. They have to, mm-hmm. and they have to find a different, you know, I'm sure there's a balance between finding too few, you said, about using search criteria that's too narrow, right? And getting in the balance of that and getting too many profiles, right? And so it's true what you said is about 400 is.
When I was a recruiter, 400 was about my sweet spot.
Okay. And so then the recruiter has to look through 400 resumes to find, mm-hmm. you know, maybe, you know, 10 to 15 to look at in depth.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That's part of the reason why recruiters are really good at looking at resumes.
Yeah. It goes to why maybe one page resumes are good.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So one of the solutions for you as the person who's submitting the resume or creating a profile is to make sure that your job title is something that's in common use. So if your business card says Wizard of Light Bulb Moments, but you're actually a marketing manager, put marketing manager on your profile or on your resume somewhere. You can have Wizard of Light Bulb Moments in brackets, or you can have marketing manager afterwards in brackets, but just make sure it's there because no one is searching for wizards.
Right. Well, and clearly no one is putting that actually on the resume. I'm sure this
you
is
You think,
just,
right?
Right.
No, yeah. There are 13 of them on LinkedIn.
Okay.
I thought there would be one, maybe, but 13?
You never know. You know, you're having a nice little weekend and you're planning a little D&D campaign in your kitchen table, and you never know. You might need a wizard. I'd go. That's where I go. I go to LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's where your inspiration comes from. So you don't want to stuff your resume with keywords, which is what people told you to do 10 years ago to get around the fact that ATSs aren't very good. Because if you stuff your resume with keywords, it's the same as when you look at a web page that's been stuffed with keywords. It just makes really odd reading. It's not English. It's not machine language because it's not code, but it it's not readable. It's not sentences or anything. So instead, just make sure that your responsibilities paragraph describes the things that are common in that role. So if you're a project manager, make sure it says manage projects. If you're a marketing manager and your job title is wizard, then one of the examples I saw, the guy described his job as a full-time insurance trainer for senior marketing specialists, where I perform webinars, design marketing pieces, create seminar presentations, maintain the senior market blog, write white papers and other tasks. And so when I did a search for an insurance agent trainer, he actually came up because he had that in his responsibilities description. So you need to think about what would somebody be searching for that I want to come up in those results. And those words need to be on your resume somewhere.
Right. So if he described himself as a wizard, he might come up in your search if, in fact, those are the kind of words you're looking for in the job description.
Yeah. It's unlikely, though. Okay. So you gotta think about, you know, what words would people use more generally to describe the role that I'm doing.
Yeah, so I guess you're in it kind of abstracted out a little bit. You're kind of thinking, I think more people are probably familiar with Google search than LinkedIn, and so you're essentially behind the scenes thinking of, hey, if Google searched my resume, would I come up under common searches for the job that I'm looking for?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
You explained it better than I do. Thank you.
No, that's good. Well, I don't think so, but I'm a simple-minded guy, so I got to come up with simple things. Okay, so that's the first myth, the myth of the ATS. Thank you. I had no idea. Now, the second one intrigues me a little bit because the myth of 6 seconds. What is that?
Okay, so...
Other than my attention span, but I'm not talking about that.
It's widely published that recruiters take less than a minute to read your resume, and it's often said it's only 6 seconds. And it's true, but it's not as negative as people want to make it out. Like, people want to say, oh, this person's never going to understand you because they only take 6 seconds to read your resume. Well, it's true they only take 6 seconds or a very short amount of time, but it's not true that they can't understand you, because recruiters look at hundreds of resumes a day. Remember, I just said I was going to look at 400 for one job search. And if I work in a big company, I've probably got 50 or 60 jobs on. And so I'm looking for resumes for all those jobs. And I need to be able to get through resumes really quickly. And I could probably get through 100 in 20 minutes. So my 400 resume search for a particular job, I could probably get done in an hour. And it's just a professional basic for recruiters to be able to look at a resume and look for the highlights and really quickly decide whether or not the person is even in the realm of possibility. And then you look at the resume, you give it some more depth of reading. It's kind of like when House goes through his differential for the disease, right? And he says, okay, it can't possibly be that they've got a broken arm because the arm is there and I can see it and it's not broken. So now I'm going to move on to a different one. And that's what recruiters do with resumes. They look at the date, the job title, and the company for your most recent job. And if it's the wrong industry or it's the wrong job title, perhaps you're already in the position that they're searching for, and so they actually need to search for someone who's a step backwards from you, and therefore your resume isn't appropriate. They might be looking at the dates and making sure that your experience is recent, particularly for tech things. They might be looking for experience in the last year of a particular technology because the changes roll out so quickly on so many of these things.
Right. So there's kind of like there's two levels of reading the resume. There's that quick 6 second, 20 second, whatever scan of it. Right. So your resume has to be optimized for that. Right. Otherwise, you even if the details, right, are great. Right. You'd be the perfect candidate and you have all that information, the details. If it's structured in a way that the recruiter can't identify that you're a potential candidate, you meet the basic criteria. if the recruiter can't identify that very quickly, you'll never make it to the detailed reading.
Exactly.
Right? And that's why I often, you do the mad, glad, sad thing, and I think you've talked about it every once in a while, but I see advice on resumes occasionally, and if, in fact, recruiters have to go through so many resumes, right, and it can only spend 6 seconds or 20 seconds or a minute on a resume, why in the world would you want to do a video resume, which requires like 5 minutes of somebody's time? It is completely oblivious of the needs of the person looking at the resume. And there's so much advice out there that it just, if you understand this basic principle in terms of what recruiters have to go through, you can look at 90% of the advice out there and go like, oh, that's not going to work. So I guess my point is the format of the resume, what it looks like, is important. If you want to get past this step, that's important. This is not this is not the place to exercise your desire to be the next Stephen King, right? There's a format for a reason.
Absolutely. And, you know, the people who have the first page, which is a summary and an objective and a bunch of other things, and then special skills, and then the job title and the company that they're in right now is on the second page. I can guarantee a recruiter hasn't read that first page. They are looking for what you're doing right now.
Right.
And so whatever you just did on the first page is wasted because they don't care about any of that stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're saying the resume has to be formatted properly, right?
It does.
And you said earlier they're looking for your most recent experience. Well, that's probably fairly important, right? It's if you're looking for somebody, you'd like somebody to have the skills and exercise those skills recently. So there's a reason we say reverse chronological order on the resume, because they're looking for your most recent experience. So putting that at the bottom makes absolutely no sense.
No sense, right? You want it to hit them as the first thing they see. And believe me, recruiters don't look at the name and the phone number and where you live until they've actually established that you have the experience they want. So
right. It
is the first thing they look for. So in the cast we have about resumes, we say reverse chronological, the dates, job titles and company names, bold and underlined. And that's literally because a recruiter is looking for those things. And you're working to their workflow, which is a good thing. And the second thing they might be looking for is a particular experience or a particular technology. Obviously, if you're a Ruby shop, you don't want people who can only do C++. I just pulled those out of thin air, so don't tell me that they're wrong.
No, it makes sense. That's good. Well done.
So if you have those skills, make sure they're included somewhere in your responsibilities and in your accomplishments. If I saw a developer who had been developing the same kind of thing that I want developed, then my next question would be, are they using the same technology? So I would be going past the 6 seconds, but I'd still be looking for something specific, and that is, what are you using? And if you listen to the resume casts or read the resume workbook, there are hints about how to get those in without making it unreadable.
Yeah, those are two good products. I must say, so not like I'm unbiased or anything. Okay.
And it's in your own interest, right? Because you're looking for the right job. You're not looking for any job. And the right job is the one that uses your skills.
Yeah, exactly, right? You're really trying to, the recruiter's looking for the right person for the job. And they have a certain set of skills and traits and characteristics, et cetera, that they're looking for. And you're trying to find the one that you match it, right? You're not trying to delude the person to thinking you have something you don't. That will generally end up poorly once you get into the job. Of course, you want to find a job that you're going to be there for a while. Yeah, so all the things we talk about there help quite a bit. All right, so let's go on to the next one, another one that I'm curious about. The myth of quote-unquote on file. What's that?
Yeah. So have you ever had a rejection letter that says, we're really sorry we're not proceeding with your application, but we'll keep your CV or your resume on file?
Oh, I never get those.
You don't? No, you've been accepted for every job, of course, because you're a genius, right?
Yeah, sure.
So it's not a lie, but it is probably not what people think either. So when I first started recruiting, we didn't have computers because I'm that old. And so the resumes were kept in big file cabinets by alphabetically by surname. And the recruiters would have 3x5 cards on their desks in a big, in some of them had like a Rolodex and some of them just had a box. And you got the job in and then you'd rifle through the box looking for the people who had the right skills. So the box on the 3x5 cards, it would have their name and their contact details and when you last spoke to them and maybe the job that they're in or their primary skills. And so you go through the box and then you go find the resumes that seem to match. And the longer someone had been a recruiter, the bigger the box was. So there was actually some advantage in dealing with recruiters with a short tenure because they had a smaller box and therefore you were more likely to be found.
Interesting.
So now the ATS takes the place of on file. And when you're rejected, the resume doesn't disappear and your record doesn't disappear. It just goes into the available section. The recruiter, the ATS assumes that if you didn't get the job here, you must be available, even though that's slightly illogical. And so when a search is made and the recruiter goes and searches for a marketing manager, if you're already in the system and you're deemed available by the system, then your resume will come up in the search. But there's the same problem. The longer the system has been around, the bigger the system. For example, if you're in a global company and it's searched for all of Europe on its own, you know, that's just the search parameters, the general ones, then there'll be hundreds and hundreds and maybe thousands of resumes. And the more there are, the less likely it is that you'll be found. And so because there are so many, what recruiters do is they cut down the volume by picking a date string, so or a date period. And it's usually about 6 months. It depends if you've got rare skills, then it might be longer. If you've got very common skills, it might be shorter. But 6 months is generally where it is.
I was going to ask if that were true, because it seems reasonable to me to believe that if somebody submitted the resume 5 years ago, the likelihood that they're available right now is probably
low.
And they've done a lot in the last 5 years, so the resume is probably obviously out of date by definition.
Yeah, and they could have taken any path since the job you knew about.
Maybe you're going to cover this, maybe I'm jumping ahead. So does that mean if I submit a resume to a company that I would like to work for, and it was 7 months ago, should I resubmit my resume to that company? Can I even do that?
Yes, you can. So some companies will allow you, especially ones with big systems, will allow you to submit an updated resume. And the system kind of considers you to have a record rather than an application. Other ones consider you to have an application and it's kind of a single thing. And in which case, if you see the same job come up again, then you can absolutely apply for it again. And that gets a current resume into the system. So jobs like accountants and developers and project managers, companies tend to have lots of those. And so there's usually a fairly regular demand for them. And so you should be able to find one to submit your resume for.
And conversely, I guess the if it's been longer than 6 months since you submitted your resume, you should probably just assume that it's like it's not there, right?
Exactly.
That's a fair assumption. Okay. That's the corollary of this follow-up rule.
Yeah. And if you talk to someone or you have an email address, we have a podcast called Maintaining Recruiter Relationships, which is about keeping them up to date on what you're doing and what you're looking for. And so you can follow the guidance in there to keep yourself upmost in their mind.
All right. So let's talk about the myth of feedback. I have to assume that this has to do with, I submit a resume, I get rejected for some reason, and I'm owed some kind of response back as to why they didn't accept me. Am I close?
Yeah.
This one I get because if you listen to the first part of this cast and the number of resumes recruiters have to go through, you immediately see how ludicrous the idea of getting feedback is.
Yeah, individual feedback for a recruiter that's literally only looked at your job title and your company and the dates that you've worked there. It doesn't make any sense. The feedback would be was you didn't fit in what I was looking for. So people expect feedback or ask for feedback after submitting their resume, after phone interviews, and then after interviews in person, things that seem to go quite far. And of course, just because you think you should get feedback doesn't mean that the world is going to conform to your wishes and you are going to get feedback. And there's a couple of reasons why. So at a minimum, after you've sent your resume or had a phone interview, you should get an email telling you that you've been rejected. So you should know your status. But of course, that's best practice. And we all know how many companies follow best practice. And we also all know how easy it is to lose things in systems and the resume doesn't get into the right status to receive a rejection email, because invariably they're not sent by one person. They're sent by the system when the resume or the application gets to a certain stage. And so often you don't get that. If you understand all the background that we've been giving you about how many resumes there are and how many jobs a recruiter might be working on, you can start to understand why it's unrealistic to expect that individual feedback. What people really want is not just, you didn't fit into my ideal candidate IDL. You really want to be told what you did well and what you could have done differently, or what experience you need to get that job.
Right, because of course you, in some cases, you feel that you do have the experience. It's just a matter of, if you'd use a couple different words in the resume or written it a little bit differently, you would have been considered, right? And clearly that the company just doesn't get it.
That's right. And if I talk to them, I can convince them that I am a good candidate.
And then on the other hand, I guess you're getting ready to say is also, it could be that like you want to work as a project manager for Apple, right? And no, I can see why you'd want. You want to, okay, well, what is Apple looking for? What skills don't I have that if I had, I'd be a great candidate? And to yourself, you're thinking, well, I like to know so I can actually go get those skills, right? Which is good for me and good for the company.
That's right.
And I understand that, absolutely. Unfortunately, it didn't work that way.
Yeah, exactly. So first of all, there's a bunch of reasons why you're not going to get that kind of feedback. And first of all, it's because recruiters and hiring managers hate those conversations. As much as anybody listening hates giving feedback, whether it's you're a manager and you're giving feedback in the feedback model, or whether you're just an ordinary person and you have to give feedback in a restaurant about my meal wasn't very good, most of us don't like having those uncomfortable conversations. And recruiters and hiring managers are exactly the same as us, and they don't like having those conversations, so they avoid them.
Just think about how it's likely to go from the recruiter standpoint or the hiring manager's standpoint. You ask them for some feedback, and so the new manager, never done it before, calls you and mm-hmm. tells you why, right? And of course, just like everybody else in the world, what you'd say is, oh, I understand completely. Thank you for your time. No, that's not the way it works. That's not the way. No, you got it wrong, or you didn't see this, and it becomes a long, drawn out conversation. Again, if you're looking through hundreds of candidates, you don't have time for those conversations, right? And they're uncomfortable because it often turns into, just like managers giving feedback to the direct, if they do it improperly, it turns into an argument every single time.
That's right. And nobody wants to do that. And secondly, it's not in the hiring manager or the recruiter's interest. Why would they tell you what you need to be successful in a job when if you didn't get this job and they don't have another one similar one advertised, or they won't in the period it will take you to take that experience, all you're going to do is get that experience and go to a similar job in a competitor. So why, they're not going to help the competition. It's not in their interest to do that.
Right. Good point.
And then last of all, or not last, but kind of the third of the big ones, it opens them up to legal issues. And people are quite scared of interviewing people and recruiting people. because of the legal implications and because those legal implications come back to the individual. So as an individual hiring manager, if you ask someone their national origin, for example, and then you appear to discriminate on that basis when you select the candidate, it's you that goes to court, or it's you that sued, not the company. And so people are quite reticent to do anything that even looks like impropriety, because right. You can ask about nation of origin. You just can't discriminate based on that when you select the candidates. But people go overboard and take themselves right out of that danger zone by not even asking.
Right, because it's a matter of who's interpreting. And somebody who wants a job and rejected and, for example, has a chip on their shoulder, if you ask the question, it is possible that they would interpret that as evidence of, if they didn't get the job, so obviously you discriminated based on it.
That's right.
Not based on the fact that you didn't have the right experience, which was true, but...
Or another candidate was better. Sometimes it's not that you're a bad candidate. It's just that somebody else had something more. So you get them on the phone, this brand new hiring manager who doesn't know any better, and he says, well, I didn't think you were articulate enough. Well, articulate to some people can be a negative word, because it might mean that you have an accent or that you speak in a dialect that they're not familiar with. And that can be down to race or country of origin. And you can see how some people would think, okay, he said I wasn't articulate. He must not understand the way I speak. And the way I speak is because of the way I was raised. And that's because of my race and my family. And I didn't get the job. And therefore, that must have had an effect. And right. So they go to sue you. So that's another reason why, if you get feedback, it's really not going to be useful to you.
It's sad. Anyway, I could make all sorts of comments about where we are as a society, but in any case, I won't. So I guess the point of all these things is, like, lack of feedback isn't about you, right?
No, it's not that the person doesn't care or isn't willing to give you feedback, or that they want you to fail. It's just uncomfortable and in some circumstances dangerous. And the only way you can get around this as the candidate is just don't ask. And if you get some feedback, just be grateful for what you get and take it with a pinch of salt, because what you're getting is the sanitized version. And, you know, don't wish for what you can't have. And it's probably not a good thing, but it's realistic.
You talked to me specifically at some things about each of these myths, but what's your general advice overall in terms of how to address this category of myths that are out there?
Okay. So you might have noticed something about all these myths. They're all about impersonal systems where you are one of many applicants. And so to avoid all the negatives, what you need to do is make yourself one of one. So you're just one candidate and you're the only person in the pool. You're not being compared with another 400 people. And the only way to do that is having a relationship with the hiring manager or someone who knows him or someone has a good relationship with him. So that when someone says your name, you're not just a resume. You're a person who he knows about, and he knows some things that don't go on your resume, like your work ethic or your ability to think of ideas and find solutions.
Right. Yeah. And when I was joking earlier about I never got one of those, you know, your resume is on file letters. And I never have, because other than the job I got 30 years ago, whenever I first got out of the Army, other than that, I've never gotten a job as a result of submitting my resume into some pool as some anonymous person. It's always been somebody I knew or a friend of a friend, right? And I wasn't just a resume. I was Mike.
Mm-hmm.
I was Joe's friend, right? I was Larry's friend, or I was, you know, for example, one of my bosses, who's my director at the time, got a job as a director in another company. And so he went to the VP and said, hey, you need to hire Mike. Well, at the time I was a senior manager. I wasn't a director. So that's how I got my first executive position, because my boss went to another company and recommended me. That's your term was being one of one. That's always the best way. And to do that, you need to get off your can and call up your friends and develop your network and build your network and do the hard work, so that when you do need a job or you do want to make a move, you're one of one to many out there.
Exactly. That's exactly the way to do it. And now you've just proved it. And so that's why, and it's never too late to start building your network. So if you're thinking, oh God, I really want another job and I have to submit it to one of these big companies and it'll go into the ATS and I won't be found. And Wendy and Mike say it's hopeless. We're not quite saying it's hopeless. And Wendy and Mike say I need a network and I only know three people and they don't really know how I work. Well, that's all true for right this minute. But in 10 minutes from now, you can have sent an email saying, hey, Joe, would you mind meeting me for coffee? I'm really interested in your job and I want to find out more about it because I potentially want to move into that area. And you have started building your network. So you can start now. And I would use the word should, but try not to use that. I would recommend that you start now.
Yeah, I think you're right. I just had an experience with that. Now I'm not. I have a network. I'm not actively trying to build it, but it gets built anyways. I mean, you start developing habits. And I had a West Point classmate of mine that I hadn't seen. I mean, I hadn't seen since West Point, which was 37 years ago. And so I forget where I saw him on a distro of a class thing or whatever. But. Anyways, I spoke with him just one time. I had a conversation with him one time, and since then we've had conversation probably every couple months or so. Like literally, like that. He is now, was he part of my network before? No, absolutely. If you haven't talked to somebody in 30 years, he's not part of your network, right? He's potential network, but And so you have some nascent network out there, even if you don't realize. And sometimes all it takes is a little bit of effort to activate it, to make it active, right? Yeah. So sometimes it's not as hard as you think.
Yeah. And relationships is the solution to so many things about your career. So even if you're not looking for a job right now, even if you have the most unique skills, which means there's only 20 jobs in the country for you, and you know all the managers for all of those jobs, it still doesn't hurt to be building your network. It still doesn't hurt to be going out there, because one day you might not want that job. You might decide to do something completely different, and then you'll need contacts in other industries. Or maybe you want to get your child or someone in your family network a job, and knowing those 20 hiring managers for the job that only you can do is not helpful in that case. There's many more reasons to have a network than just for my next job. And so there is no reason not to, and every reason to work on your network.
Excellent. Very cool.
Good. Have I illuminated you?
You have.
Eliminated the dark space about resumes and ATSs.
You know, what I love about this cast, we provide a lot of guidance about how to do resumes and build your network. We have tons of podcasts on all this stuff that have been useful to, you know, tens of thousands of hundreds of thousands of people. And, you know, sometimes understanding, and you can just go exercise, do all, you know, exercise all recommendations and do very well. But sometimes, you know, understanding some of these myths and understanding the basis for some of our recommendations can help you gain some confidence in what the recommendations are. And once you understand what's happening and then why it's happening, you can work out what to do to come out on top of that situation. And, you know, like you said, 99% of the time, you know, it's having a relationship, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's terribly useful, whether this applies to you right now or probably if it doesn't right now, it probably will, you know, sometime in the future. You can make use of this, you know, and I think the lesson for here, if you're not actively looking for a job right now, the lesson right here is start on your building your network, right? That's the action out of this.
Good. We should stop talking so everybody can go send that email for their network.
Do it now.
Exactly.
All right. See you, Wendy.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you next week. Have a great one. So long.
Career Tools produces actionable guidance for professionals every week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face, go to www.managertools.com. Search for Career Tools on Twitter and LinkedIn.